Most people now carry a tool that, used one way, hands them an expert tutor, and used another way, quietly makes them worse at their own job. Same tool. So, here is the question almost nobody asks cleanly. What does it actually mean to use AI well? Not more, not less, but well. This is a sequel to our last question, whether worrying about AI's power bill is quietly anti-climate. We argued the real bottleneck is not energy, it is adoption, actually using the thing to push the frontier. Fine. But use it is not advice. More than half of American adults have now tried these tools, and plenty came away with slop, distraction, or a vague sense they were cheating. So, this episode is about the gap between owning AI and getting value from it, where the value is already real, where it backfires, and a stranger idea, that even the fumbling may be worth more than it looks. Start with how far this has spread. By late 2024, about 39.6% of working-age Americans had used generative AI. Among the under-30s, 76%, half of them every week. At work, use climbed from 33% to roughly 41% in a single year. But adoption is not benefit. Having the tool open in a tab tells you nothing about whether it made your work better, worse, or just faster at producing more of nothing. The real question was never how many people use it. It is what separates the people it helps from the people it quietly hurts. So, where is the value already real, not promised? Three places the evidence is hard to argue with. Customer support. In a study of 5,179 agents, an AI assistant lifted problems solved per hour by 14%, and 34% for the newest, least skilled workers, by handing them the habits of the best ones. Education. A World Bank trial in Nigeria gave students 6 weeks of after-school AI tutoring and saw learning gains worth 1.5 to 2 years of school, among the most cost-effective programs ever measured, with the biggest jumps for girls. And accessibility. Be My AI now describes the visual world, instantly and free, to hundreds of thousands of blind and low-vision users. Notice the pattern. The clearest wins go to people climbing toward a skill, not experts already at the top, which is to say, the model looks less like a genie and more like a teacher. One who knows more than you about most things is confidently wrong in unpredictable places and is worth the most when it makes you need it less. Which is exactly why the same tool helps one person and harms another. Researchers studied 758 consultants and named what they found a jagged frontier. On tasks inside AI's range, the ones using it were 25% faster and produced work rated 40% higher in quality. But step outside that range, to tasks the model is quietly bad at, and it did not merely fail to help. Performance fell about 23% because a confident wrong answer is worse than no answer. The skill, it turns out, is not using AI. It is knowing where the edge of the frontier is, and that edge stays invisible until you have felt it. And here is the finding that should keep us honest. When Meta ran a careful trial with 16 experienced open-source developers across 246 tasks, letting them use AI made them 19% slower. The twist: they had expected to be 24% faster, and even afterwards swore it had sped them up by 20%. The tool felt like a gain while it was a loss, the most dangerous kind of error. But watch what came next. When Meta repeated it with a bigger group, 57 developers, the slowdown shrank to about 4%, well inside the noise. The curve was already bending as the tools and the people using them got better.
Before we romanticize any of this, the harms are real. An MIT Media Lab team wired up 54 people writing essays and found the ones leaning hardest on a chatbot showed the weakest brain activity, the least sense of ownership, and often could not quote a sentence they'd just produced, what they called cognitive debt. And in offices, a survey of 1,150 workers found 40% had been handed AI work slop in a single month, confident empty output dressed up as work, costing nearly 2 hours each to clean up, about $186 per worker a month. These are the dead ends, the dependency, the distraction, the slop dumped on a colleague. They are real. The question is whether they are disqualifying or just the price of something. So what does good use look like for a normal person, concretely? The studies all rhyme. The wins come when you are climbing towards something and can check the result.
Learning a subject from scratch, like those students in Nigeria, getting unstuck, a first draft, a summary, a rough plan you will revise. Translation and access for people the old interfaces shut out. Code for someone who could never write it. The losses come when you invert that, outsourcing the judgment you are supposed to be exercising on a task you cannot check in a domain past the frontier. Same tool, opposite outcome. The practical rule is almost embarrassingly simple. Use it where you could catch its mistakes and where catching them teaches you something. Because step back, and there is a pattern economists have seen before. Erik Brynjolfsson calls it the productivity J-curve. Every general-purpose technology, electricity, computers, first makes measured productivity dip because the gains are not in the machine. They are in everything humans have to reinvent around it. New skills, new workflows, new habits, none of which exist yet. The technology arrives in an instant, the know-how takes years. So a tool that slows an expert today and speeds a novice tomorrow is not a contradiction. It is a society partway up its own learning curve, and the curve only bends because people are on it. And that is what the whole, is it worth it for me, framing misses. The map of what AI is actually good for does not exist yet. It is being drawn, right now, by millions of people trying things, most leading nowhere, some somewhere, a few becoming the practice everyone copies. Every dead end someone hits fills in a square of that map, which means the early, clumsy, often wasteful adopters are doing unpaid research for everyone who comes after. The person who waits until the best practices are clear is free riding on a map that exists only because other people refuse to wait. There is no settled best practice waiting off stage. Best practice is the residue of a million experiments, and someone has to run them. So the harms, the cognitive debt, the work slop, are not reasons to sit out. They are reasons to explore better, to share what works, to scaffold the dead ends so they stay cheap, to catch the distractions early. The failure mode is not using it badly. It is everyone waiting for someone else to figure it out. So, back to using it well. For a normal person, it is not a secret prompt. It is a posture. Use it where you are climbing toward a skill, not coasting on one. Stay alert to the edge of the frontier and treat a confident answer as a claim, not a fact. Keep doing the thinking you are actually trying to keep and treat it like a good teacher, the kind whose job is to work themselves out of a job. And when you find something that works, say so, out loud, to someone. Because the real question was never whether AI makes you more productive this afternoon. It is whether you are contributing to the map or waiting on the people brave enough to get lost first.